Welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome to the Keystone Kickoff Show. I'm Jim Galante along with Jeff Byers. Jeff, welcome back. Where you been, by the way?
You know, that toddling little town of Kansas City, not a bad place to be, by the way. If you're looking for cities to visit, I wasn't really sure what to expect, but that Power and Light District, which is where the arena, T-Mobile Center that they used for the NCAA Wrestling Championships is located. That Power and Light District has a lot going on. Really, really neat area. And obviously, with the Chiefs coming off the Super Bowl, there is a ton of excitement. Maybe not quite as much excitement about the Royals' upcoming baseball season, but you know, that city is definitely has a lively feel to it.
Please tell me you were in Kansas City. You had some Kansas City barbecue.
You know, I never really thought about that. We had Mexican every night. Kansas City, well known for its Mexican. No, of course we had barbecue. Yeah, the place that was recommended to us, and I would certainly recommend it, was Q39. And it's on, I forget now if it's Q Street or Q Avenue, but that's where the Q comes into play. But it's Q39. And my goodness. Everybody at our table had something different. I ended up getting the brisket and pork combination, and it really was phenomenal. So thank you for that, dear Kansas City.
Jim is now hungry.
Me too.
All right. Hey, Jeff, why don't we move on? Why don't we talk about the wrestling that occurred there? And I've mentioned this probably about 1,000 times on our show. You told me before this season even started that this could possibly be the best collegiate wrestling team of all time. Nothing happened at that national championship to change your mind, I'm assuming.
That is correct. And, you know, there's a lot of different ways to measure it. And, you know, there's I've seen some columns and stuff, and, you know, if you use today's scoring in terms of the tournament scoring, not the three-point takedown and stuff, but if you use today's scoring with the placement points and all of that, there actually are two other teams that surpassed both the 97 Hawkeyes and this year's Penn State team. That, for me, is not the sole measure of how I'm looking at the greatest team ever. And to me, this team, this Penn State team, the 2024 Nittany Lions, do go down in my mind as the greatest ever. And I think for a bunch of different reasons. One is they went undefeated and they dominated all of the dual meets that they wrestled. They dominated the Big Ten tournament and they dominated the NCAA, obviously winning by the largest margin of victory by a substantial amount with 100 points. And that's just absurd to think about. But I also think when you look at the caliber and the entertainment value of the wrestling involved, guys like Carter Sturacci and Aaron Brooks, who now are two of the seven all-time four-time individual champions, the fact that you had both of those guys on one team adds to my argument for this being the greatest team ever. I think when you look at the way guys like Mitchell Messenbrink and Levi Haynes and Greg Kirkfleet and even guys like Braden Davis and Tyler Kasak went out and competed, and I'm going to end up leaving people off the list that I don't mean to, but I mean, up and down the lineup, this was a team that was fun to watch. They were exciting to watch by and large. Again, they dominated, they set the points record, and I get that, you know, there's different ways you can break that down at the NCAA tournament, but I also think, you know, all 10 guys were All-American caliber. I get the two guys wrestled, you know, one win shy of All-America honors, but nobody out there thinks that Braden Davis or Aaron Nagao aren't, you know, All-American caliber wrestlers. Davis obviously was a Big Ten champion, number one seed, had several wins over guys that ended up on the podium as All-Americans throughout the season. And Aaron Nagao was an All-American a year ago, finishing fifth when he was at Minnesota. So, I mean, we've already seen that he's capable of doing it. So, but I also look at the depth on this team, Jim, and I keep going back to that Rutgers dual meet at the Jordan Center. But I think when you look at, you know, in that dual meet, you had two different guys, ironically enough, both from the same home state as head coach Cale Sanderson from Utah, but both guys filled in for starters, wrestled up a weight class, wrestled against highly ranked opponents. In the one case, Lucas Cochran beat an eventual All-American. So you had a 97-pounder move up and wrestle and win a heavyweight bout against an eventual All-American, and another move up a weight class in Terrell Barraclough and beat a highly ranked. I have to go back and look now. I think Turley won a couple of bouts, at least won one at the NCAA tournament for Rutgers. So to me, it's that combination, the entertainment value, the domination, the consistency, and then the depth on this team. To me, we've just never seen anything like it when you combine everything together. And I would argue pretty fervently that this was the greatest college wrestling team we've ever seen.
And that's the discussion about a one-year entity, a one-year team. But this is a team that's been dominant for the last decade, Jeff. So I know when you're saying greatest individual team, it's a yearly basis. The rest doesn't count. But I think just in having this discussion, you have to point that out.
Yeah, and I think, Jim, when you look at since Cale came to Penn State, what Penn State has done is phenomenal. The numbers are staggering. But they're even more so when you look from 2016 till now, what this program has done consistently in winning NCAA semifinal and title bouts is just not only unprecedented, there's nothing that's been close to it. Getting to put it in some perspective, like getting multiple finalists is a big deal for any college program. Iowa, Oklahoma State, Penn State, like having more than one in the finals is not insignificant. Like that is a big deal and should rightly be celebrated. Penn State, since 2016, is averaging five finalists per NCAA, meaning half of their starting lineup on average, every year since 2016, is in the NCAA finals. That's absurd. I mean, I would have thought that not to be possible before we saw Penn State actually go out and do it. And, you know, even more astounding in there is only once in that time frame. I mean, it's basically been five every year, except for this year they had six. And then there was one year, 2022, where they only, I'm putting only in air quotes, only had four, and they went 4-0. It's just breathtaking what this program is doing at the highest levels of the sport. And, we've just never seen anything like it in terms of the individual finalists and then champions over, in particular, since 2016 here, nothing close to what we're seeing this Penn State program produce.
This might be a strange question, Jeff, but I'll ask it anyway. It's never stopped me before. When I go to college football and you look at the most dominant team, it's Alabama. And you know, you could say whatever you want, great coaching with Nick Saban, but I could look and they get over a 10-year span, they have the number one recruiting class 8 out of 10 times, and the ninth time they're second, okay? There's your answer of why they win all the time. What is it that makes Penn State wrestling such a consistent winner, not just a winner, a dominant winner year after year?
Yeah, it's a combination of things. And it does start with recruiting, and make no mistake, Penn State is getting tremendously talented wrestlers and you know, the top guys in the country very consistently. I mean, you go back and, you know, David Taylor was the guy coming out and obviously produced. Bo Nickel was very highly sought after. And you go down the list. Mitchell Messenbrink came on strongly. He wasn't as highly touted earlier in his high school career, but certainly, you know, him coming in, he had a ton of very high expectations. Greg Kerfleet, you go right down the list. Aaron Brooks, you knew, was kind of one of those can't miss prospects. Now, so they are getting the top end talent. There's no doubt about that. But I also think they are hitting on the guys that, again, that have high expectations, but aren't necessarily the guys that are looked at as the guy in their recruiting class. So, like Carter Cerracci, people thought he was going to have a very good college career. I don't know that I don't know that anybody anywhere was like, yep, that's going to be a four-time NCAA champion. You thought he was going to be very good. Again, it's not like he snuck up on you, but in terms of, wow, like one of those generational talents, I'm not sure people necessarily thought that. So they are, again, recruiting at a very high level. You start there, and that's unquestionably happening. But I also think Penn State does a tremendous job of allowing their wrestlers to wrestle their style and not trying to force them into any preconceived notion of what a Penn State wrestler is. So, you know, a guy like Bo Bartlett is wrestling a very different style than Mitchell Messenbrink, who's wrestling a different style than Aaron Brooks. And all of those guys feel the freedom to go out and be who they are, work on the, you know, the things that they need to work on to get better at, but really capitalize on what is the strength of their games. And then I think the biggest thing is just the mental component. I think Penn State does a better job. This coaching staff does a better job of getting the confidence level high and the ability to peak, the ability to perform on the biggest stage and the biggest moments. These guys do it more consistently than any other in the country.
All right, Jeff, that is the wrestling wrap-up. When we come back in quarter number two, we shift gears. We're going with football right after this break. Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
It's quarter number two on the Keystone Kickoff Show, brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He is Jeff Byers. I am Jim Galante. Jeff, it's time to talk some football. Of course, spring practice is going on right now. James Franklin meets the media, I guess, every week now. And, you know, I think the best thing that I can say for this last go-round with the media is how boring it was. It's actually, if it's spring practice and there's no real news, that's great news, is it not?
It is. It is indeed. And listen, I do think, you know, the couple of things that I think Penn State clearly wanted to get established this spring, and it sounds like they are at least in the process of doing that, is getting the new coordinators obviously acclimated with the team and vice versa, getting the team comfortable with the coordinators and what the expectations are, what the you know, languages, kind of an idea of the general game plans for play calling and all of that stuff. So, you know, it does sound like that's going well. And I think that is a, I do think that's a tremendous credit to James Franklin and the coordinators and the other coaches for the time that they put in and the preparation ahead of time before spring drills to make that happen. And then, you know, as with every team in every part of the season, you're hoping to get through without any significant injuries. And it appears, you know, Penn State is pretty much doing that here in the spring. So, yeah, I'm with you. Kind of no news is good news on the Penn State football front these days.
I think the question that prompted the response from James Franklin was about the progress of the team through it. And James Franklin was, look, sorry, guys, I'm giving you the same answer, but we're building a foundation now. We're just, you know, setting the groundwork for everything. And again, that it's an obvious answer, but it's also a good answer and one that Penn State fans should be happy to hear. And especially when you're trying to implement things with new coordinators on both sides, and even, and this is James Franklin saying this, he's my head coach of the offense. He's my head coach of the defense. It's not, gee, I just brought someone in who's been in the system and learned from me, so they're going to regurgitate things that I say. I want each of these coordinators to take control of their side of the ball. So that means those guys have to set their own foundation of what they want to do, Jeff.
Yeah. No, and I think that's what you want. You want that involvement and, you know, you want the open communications. And again, not everybody's going to get their way on every issue. And I think that's okay. I think you need to, at the end of the day, all right, yep, this is what makes sense for us moving forward, and this is the way we'll proceed. And I think, you know, the other part of it, Jim, is getting some of the newcomers to buy in to what you're doing. Obviously, you need the guys that have been here to buy in, but you also, you know, and again, from all accounts, I'm not up there, I'm not around, but it sure sounds like Julian Fleming in particular has been a huge asset here to this program from a leadership standpoint. But it sounds like kind of all of the transfers along with the coordinators are fitting in very well, and that everybody is, you know, moving forward here with the same ideas in mind.
I want to get to Julian Fleming in a bit, but just going back to this coordinator thing, because it intrigues me. I get the sense when Mike Yurcich left, part of this was there was not that cohesion among the coaches. Mike Yurcich was a little bit of an outlier culture-wise, where you get the feeling that Andy Kotelnik, even though he's coming from another place as a coordinator, and Tom Allen coming from someplace else as a head coach, but they both have that same kind of energy and enthusiasm that James Franklin is looking for on his staff. And that because of that, we're looking at two coordinators who are probably a better fit than, say, Mike Yurcich was, more in tune with Manny Diaz and his attitude. I'm not talking about X's and O's. I'm just talking about the emotional part of this, Jeff.
Yeah, no, and listen, I think part of it for both Kotelnicki and Allen is I think they genuinely believe that they are now in a place where they can be part of a championship program, right? Like, and I don't think that was the case, and no disrespect to Indiana or to Kansas and Kansas. You know, maybe they think they are going to get there. But, I mean, clearly, to me, part of their coming to Penn State is, hey, we think we could be part of something really special here. Really special being, you know, again, a Big Ten and or a national championship. And so I do think And I think the Penn State name, you know, it might not be Alabama. We can debate where in the overall pantheon the Nittany Lions fall, but it is a big time program with a big time feel and a lot of tradition and history behind it. And I think these guys are genuinely excited and enthused to be part of it and to bring their stamp to the program, but not to the degree that, again, it's I want to show these guys that my way is the right way, right? It's no, I want to be part of this, and let's figure out what the best way to move forward to give us a chance to be part of something special is. And so, you know, that to me is exciting, that you have these different guys with maybe some different concepts, different backgrounds, all of that kind of all coming together here and saying, all right, let's put egos aside, figure out the best way to get what we want to get accomplished and proceed. And I just think it feels like they have the right mix here of, you know, personality, strategy, athletes, and all of it to make something special occur. Now, whether or not it actually does, we'll find out here over the next couple of seasons.
It's interesting. I hadn't thought about it that way, about moving from Kansas and Indiana to Penn State. Obviously, I know, you know, Penn State, better program than at those two schools, but I hadn't thought about it in terms of, for the coordinators themselves, hey, this is a great opportunity to be part of a team that does have the opportunity to go to the next level. And, you know, no matter how you look at it, even with the expanded 12-team playoffs, I'm not looking for Kansas and or Indiana to be a playoff team, whereas at Penn State, yes, you do have the opportunity. The one thing that came up in the press conference and talking about the coordinators that was a, kind of a fun little tidbit was James Franken talking about Tom Allen as he's blowing the whistle a little too much. I'm assuming that means that's supposed to be the head coach's job, not the coordinator's job. And Tom Allen may be just a little too enthusiastic in hitting his whistle.
You got to get it right. I like the mentality there anyway.
I do too. I think it's a funny thing. And it must be, yeah, still an adjustment. I suspect for Tom Allen, even though, sure, you'd love to be the head coach, but I think, you know, going back, being a defensive coordinator, it's his bailiwick. He's probably more comfortable with that in certain ways, but there is just that instinct that you're the head guy, you see something, I'm in charge. If I want to blow the whistle, I blow the whistle.
No doubt. Yeah, no, I think that's, and I'm sure they're having fun with that on the field. And at the end of the day, you know, one of the things out of all of this, and with all of the things going on surrounding college athletics, I really do hope that the kids and the coaches in all of these various programs do remember that at the end of the day, this is a game, and it ought to be fun, and you know, not easy, not goofing around, but there ought to be an element of fun. It ought to be something that these guys want to do and that you enjoy being out there in a competitive field doing what you're doing.
And it can be such drudgery, especially in the spring. You're so far away from games that count. Yes, I think having a little bit of fun with it is great. Now, let's get a little bit into the players that were mentioned. You brought up Julian Fleming. And in talking about it, was interesting. James Franklin talked about this is the second recruiting process with Julian Fleming. And somewhere in there, I just got the feeling James Franklin was looking at it like, okay, this was a young man, a high school student coming out, going through that process. And now we're talking to a mature young man. And that's a different entity than what we dealt with a couple years ago.
Well, and it's interesting, Jim, because I think sometimes having, and you know, maybe I'm presuming here, but I think it's probably safe to say that the Ohio State experience was a little humbling for Julian Fleming, right? You're coming out as, you know, an all-star, a can't-miss type of guy. And, you know, he did not have the success that I think he and certainly that others were expecting at Ohio State. And I think how you handle that and how you learn from that is important. And I do think it at least sounds like, you know, he has kind of taken ownership of it. And again, much like the coordinators, I think is excited to be part of something that I think he feels can be very special here at Penn State as well. And, you know, that leadership component, we talk about it a lot, Jim, but I do think it is underrated. Yep, you need a lot of talent. I mean, if you can't run fast and you can't throw far and all of that, I get it. You're going to struggle to compete. So there's, you know, a certain level of athleticism and all of that that you have to have. But that leadership component to me in the ultimate team sport of football is huge. And it certainly sounds like Fleming is very much stepping into one of the leadership roles here on the offensive side of the ball.
It does sound that way, Jeff. We're out of time now for quarter two. I want to add one more comment to the Julian Fleming topic when we come back for quarter three. Stick with us.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
Let's get back to the action on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. He's Jeff, I'm Jim. We are talking Penn State football and specifically James Franklin's press conference earlier in the week. His team is in the middle of their spring practice. And, you know, Jeff, I hate to read between the lines, put words in people's mouths, but that is what we do, right? So So I'm going to do it anyway.
Yeah,
I hate doing it, Jeff.
By the way.
I presume most people think I do too. And yeah, I'll give in. Yes, I do. But it feels like every conversation about Julian Fleming, if they don't use the word mature, they use all the words around that word mature and talking about him. And my putting things together and reading between the lines, it makes me think perhaps that was something missing in the wide receiver room. And even this time, as I said, I think, you know, Julian Fleming at what now, 22 or whatever it is now versus 18, is a different animal altogether. I guess we all are much different at 22 than we were at 18, but it feels like that's something that is very welcome in the wide receiver room. So I that's a little reading between the lines, but I think that's a going to turn out to be a very good addition to the wide receiver room. A couple other names that were mentioned, Jeff, he was asked about the quarterbacks. I thought it was a little bit of an interesting answer. He talked about the competition between Drew Aller and Bo Prabula. I imagine that can mean for every drill, you know, they're competing against each other, which is a good thing. He's not talking about them competing for the number one role, though, is he?
I do not believe so. Now, that being said, I really am expecting Prabula to have a bigger role on the team in the upcoming season. I thought all of last year that eventually we were going to see him be utilized the way he was right at the end of the year. But I kept thinking that was going to happen throughout the season. But I think now that you've seen what he can bring to short yardage situations or in that package, I think you're going to see him utilized. Now, in terms of competing for and being the number one quarterback, no, not so much. But I do think he's going to be a bigger part of the offense, even as Drew Aller, I also think, is going to take that next step and become a consistently great quarterback, not just a quarterback that doesn't make mistakes, but a quarterback that goes out and makes plays that can win you big games, not the games against the, forgive me, Tom Allen, the Indianas of the world, but, plays that can go out and beat a USC or an Ohio State, God willing, and that sort of thing. By the way, just real quickly, I wanted to circle back, Jim, because I'm reading some of the mail that we're getting, and there seems to be some concern that there's a lack of maturity when I come on with our segments here as well. The maturity level does not seem to be widely praised in these corners. So I promise I will work on that. The immaturity level is probably still pretty high.
You do realize, Jeff, that's why we have you on the show, though. We think that's your most outstanding personality trait is the immaturity.
You need a little more immaturity. I'm happy to serve. It's we all have our role in life. Julian Fleming brings more maturity to the receiving room. I bring more immaturity to the broadcast room. Hey, we all fill our role.
Each to our skills, Jeff. Each to our skills.
Exactly right.
At least you're bringing something to the table. That's very good. Now, back to talking about the quarterbacks. Drew Aller, Bo Prabula were mentioned, competition. James Franklin just also mentioned true freshman Ethan Grunkmeyer doing some really good things. What about the other quarterback? When you don't hear a name, sometimes that tells you as much as anything else. Now, my understanding, I read a report like, when the media has been at practice, Smolik has not been there. Now, that could be very simply explained, like a conflict with a class on that particular day, something like that. But I then found it interesting. It's not like James Franklin or most coaches. You've got four scholarship quarterbacks and you talk about three of them.
Correct. Yeah, I do think it's pretty telling. And again, we'll wait and see what comes of it, or more likely what doesn't come of it. But you know, it's also kind of the nature of the beast, Jim, where you know, I think recruiting, just like in the NFL when we talk about the draft, like there are misses that are in there, even where you think you have a hit. And I'm not throwing the kid under the bus. I obviously have no idea what is or isn't going on there. But I also think if it is a situation where, yep, it's just not panning out, to me, that's forgivable. If you hit on three out of four, again, overall, the recruiting front, if you can consistently that 750, you're going to take it.
Well, Jeff, on this show, I have been very, very consistent about not naming names when talking about potential transfer candidates, okay? And it is a story, and I thought of this too when James Franklin was talking about during this time of the year, no decisions are being made, you know, about first team, second team, third team. That's what he was referring to. Well, some decisions have to be made. At least 12 of them need to be made when you've got 97 players on scholarship and you need to get it down to 85. So despite what James Franklin's saying, you know, it's not every position up in the air until mid-August. No. Some of those decisions and conversations are going to happen very shortly. Now, with the quarterback conversation, and trust me, this is not specifically about Jackson Smolik, but some of the statistics, Jeff, on the quarterbacks hitting the transfer portal are absurd. the vast majority, and I'm talking about, and I wish I could remember the number, I read it somewhere, like 70 to 80% of the quarterbacks, if they are not starting after 2 years at a school, they transfer. It's some absurd number like that. By the way, you know, Bo Pribula is well past that time, and Jackson Smolak will be there, you know, after this year. So the fact that nobody has left yet from the quarterback room, I know Christian Vaiu is the perfect example of that. He was here a couple years, and Drew Allard bypassed him on the depth chart, leaped him to second on the depth chart, and Christian Vaiu left. And I don't think anybody would blame him for doing that. Is this perhaps an indicator that Ethan Grunkmeyer is advancing?
I think that is the case. You know, the other thing is you're saying that, Jim, and I'm sure I just haven't seen it or looked at it, but what I would be interested in seeing is the follow-up to that and how many of those guys then that transfer, I'm talking about, the quarterbacks that transfer, then at the end of their collegiate careers are satisfied and they're like, yep, man, that was a good move, and I became the starter, and I did everything I wanted to do in college. Because I suspect a good number of those guys never find what they're looking for, and that part of it is they're just not as good as they thought they were, as some were telling them, and all of that. And again, there's going to be plenty of exceptions both ways. I get it. There's plenty that you know, it works out great for, and that's what they wanted. But I would like to see the numbers there on, you know, how many of them then after transferring did become the starter, and then even if, you know, that's step one of it. But if you became the starter, did you have a season or a career that you look back on and it's like, yep, that's what I thought I could do, where I'm completing, you know, 65% of my passes and it's a 2-to-1 touchdown ratio and I just needed to get in the right spot? Or are most of these guys going to places and struggling a little bit because, again, they were at a place where the talent was just better than what they were able to offer?
And I would venture, and this is a guess, but the things when I have gone and looked at the transfer portal for looking for other things, I think you're probably right in that more often they are disappointed, okay? Because that's been the nature. I may not have looked for exactly what you're asking, but the nature of it. I mean, just in general, a good number of guys, they enter the portal. They never come out of the portal, Jeff. And at quarterback, the numbers are staggering how many enter the portal, but here's where I will defend the players for doing it. And I'll use Christian Vaiu as the example. As soon as Drew Aller jumped ahead of him behind Sean Clifford, and Drew Aller was a year behind Christian Vaiu, barring injury, that was it. Christian Vaiu's career at Penn State was never going to end up with him being a starter. So if someone wants to argue, gee, he went to Pitt and didn't become a starter there, I still do not blame him for making that decision, looking for the opportunity.
No, I'm with you. I don't blame them. I do. There's two parts to it. One is I do think there is value to sticking it out, even in those situations. And this is, you know, maybe old school me thinking that you know, there just is value to being a good teammate and to being a guy that, and maybe you do get that chance with injury. I mean, not that you're hoping for that, but you never know. But the other part of it is, and I don't begrudge anybody trying to take advantage of an opportunity to better themselves or further their career, whether it works out or not. But also, there is just one starting quarterback at each of these programs, right? And there are, you know, at least 100 kids, probably more like 150 coming out every year. And, you know, so you're talking about 500, 600 kids that are coming out over the course of a collegiate career that are like, I want to be a starter. I'm a Division I starter. Well, you're not. There's not that many opportunities. And there's some really good kids, by the way, that never become starters.
Jeff, that's going to be it for quarter number three, but I have a follow-up thought about the transfer portal. We'll get to that right after this break.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.
We head to the home stretch in quarter number four on the Keystone Kickoff Show. Brought to you by the Keystone Sports Network. Get the best Penn State sports news and analysis at KeystoneSportsNetwork.com or download the Keystone Sports app from your smartphone.
Hello and welcome back to the Keystone Kickoff Show. It's quarter four. He's Jeff Byers. I'm Jim Galante. And Jeff, we're having an interesting conversation about the transfer portal. How about that? But it was interesting. We were talking about the quarterback situation, and quarterback is different from every other position in that not only is there just one quarterback on the field, you don't typically rotate the quarterbacks. So it's one guy, one position. If you have five quarterbacks in scholarship on your roster, one plays, four do not. One happy guy, four unhappy guys. And you talked about there's something to sticking around. And coaches will talk about this. Stick around to earn your way onto the team. And at other positions, I'm with you 1,000%. I look at a guy like Nick Dawkins. How many years did he wait to get his opportunity? And all reports is that he is as good a soldier as you could ever want. Even without starting, he was a leader in the locker room. Just that's the kind of guy he is. And hopefully that is all, you know, he's rewarded for that patience and hard work this year. But at quarterback, you're in that position, and not picking on Christian Vaiu, because I'm actually supportive of what he did. As soon as Drew Aller was listed ahead of him, he was a good soldier that whole season, if you remember.
Oh,
he
yeah.
spent that season behind him without complaint. After the season, he moved to Pitt, where he felt he would get an opportunity. And at least on the surface, it looked like he got the opportunity. They've now moved on. So I think there might be some Penn State fans who'll say, look, he should have never left because he didn't get the starting job there. My take is that was a smart move on his part, to at least give himself the opportunity somewhere else. And who knows, maybe he'll move on again. And, you know, but I'm perfectly okay with that, Jeff. Not only am I okay, but I think that is what the transfer portal was designed for.
Yeah. And again, different guys are looking, excuse me, for different things. And, you know, if what you want is the opportunity to be the starter or to compete for a starting job, and a lot of these guys do, and I'm perfectly fine with that. Again, you have, you know, 5 years to spend 4 years of a college career, and you don't get that opportunity again. It's a once-in-a-lifetime shot. So, if you feel like you have no shot where you're at, and being a starter is important, and I think for a lot of kids it is, and certainly for a lot of quarterbacks it is. So, yeah, I don't hold any ill will. I do think, again, for me, there is some, and I'm not, you know, take Vaiu out of it. I'm not necessarily looking at his situation, but I do think there is value to staying where you're at, continuing to fight to be a good teammate. And I'm not saying it's across the board and that anybody who ever leaves is some sort of a traitor or anything like that. I'm just saying I do think there's some value in that as well, and getting the experience of being the backup. And again, it all depends on what you're looking for and what you're wanting to get out of your collegiate experience. And that's not the same for everybody. And, you know, some people are at their dream school and they'll be at their dream school no matter what. That's what they wanted to be. More than anything, they wanted to be an Ohio State football player or a Penn State player. And if they can be the starter, all the better. But that was their dream, is being part of the program. But for a lot of them, yeah, it is. I want to be a starter. I want to have the memories later in my life of being out there on the field competing for my team. And that makes a ton of sense to me. I get it. Why wouldn't you want that? And if you're good enough, and a lot of these guys are obviously good enough to be out on a college football field, but you're not getting the opportunity for whatever reason at the school you're at, yeah, I don't begrudge anybody moving on and trying to take advantage of the very limited opportunity they have to go play college football.
Now, after I've been here, you know, arguing for guys using the transfer portal, I'll give the other example, which is exactly like you talk about, Penn State's tight end room. That is the ultimate. You come in, you do your time, and you work your way up the pecking order. And it seems like every year the top guy moves on, goes to the NFL, and the guy who was number two becomes number one, number three becomes number two, and you just work your way up the depth chart, Jeff. That's the way I think you want, as a fan and probably as the coaching staff, how you want every position to work out. So after I argue the other way, now I'm flipping and I'm going to talk about exactly what you are, that, you know, the sticking around, doing the reps, doing the time, getting mentored by the guys in front of you. So after we've beaten that topic to a pulp, let's move on. A couple news items that I wanted to throw at you. Apparently, class of 25, Penn State recruit quarterback Matt Zoller, Pennsylvania kid, number one in PA, a top 100 national recruit. He's going to make his decision, I guess it's next week. Penn State appears to be in a pretty good position with him, but just in general, not him specifically, but how important is it to get the number one kid in Pennsylvania, especially when he's a quarterback, to stay home?
Well, so in the moment, it feels like it's critical and horrible for your program if you don't get him. And do you want him? Yes. I mean, Penn State obviously is involved with him, so it's not like Penn State sees some glaring flaw that they're like, nope, we're out. Somebody else go ahead and take him, right? They recognize that he at least has a lot of potential here at the next level. So do you want him? Yes. Do you go out and get do everything you can to get him? Yes. And then if he comes, you celebrate it, and yep, this was absolutely key. And if he doesn't, you go out and try to bring in another top 100 quarterback. And if that quarterback comes in and has a great career, nobody cares. You know, 5 years down the road, you know, overused around here is the whole Dan Kendra situation from now, you know, a lifetime ago. But it was, I mean, there were people, and I was hosting a talk show at State College at the time, and there were people that were like apoplectic about the fact that how could Penn State let Dan Kendra get away? This is at the end of the world type stuff. And again, it's football. It's one player. Now, maybe he does go on and have a great career, whether it's here or somewhere else, and everybody's like, yeah, man, that was key to either getting him or not getting him. But as often as not, again, those guys, there are a bunch of great players out there. And if you miss on one, regardless of how important it seems, and yep, I get the whole dominate the state and the importance of the quarterback spot and all of it. I get it. But I never believe that it is absolutely critical that you get one guy. And again, not taking this situation into account. Just, I don't ever think in a sport like football, where again, even if you miss on the, you know, let's say he truly is the number one guy, he ends up being, you know, a guy who's a 4-year starter, puts up great numbers. Well, there's somebody else out there who's going to be number two and would be just fine on every other team. And you go down, really, if you get one of the top 20 over a 4 or 5 year period, right? And you get the rest of the team around him to be solid, you're in fine shape. So I never subscribe to the, oh, you've got to get this guy or it is devastating for your recruiting. I don't buy it in a sport like football, where again, you can have the greatest player on the planet, and if you don't have the proper surrounding talent around him, it still doesn't matter. You're not going to be successful either because you have or be not successful because you don't have one guy.
Jeff, look at you, showing perspective and, dare I say it, maturity in how you look at the issue.
How dare you? I'm gonna make fart noises under my armpit just to prove you wrong. I am not mature.
How dare you say that to me? And you, of course, you're right, Jeff. On a team that has 85 scholarship players, you don't make or break that with one player. And you make a good point. If you don't get this one, you go out and get someone else, even if they're from another state. As a fan, though, we are just so conditioned to, you know, those in-state guys, we feel like they're ours, or they're supposed to be. And I won't go all the way back to Dan Kendra, and I am sure at least half our audience are saying, Dan, who? Youngsters, Google is your friend. I'll just go back to Julian Fleming a couple years ago and how, you know, Penn State fans went overboard. Now, I'm sure you could also say, hey, we could have really used him over these last couple years. But, and, you know, we tend to put a little more value on those Pennsylvania kids. Let me give you one other note. Not this year, following year, Penn State filled out their non-conference schedule with FIU, Jeff.
Yes, indeed.
That adds, they're added to Villanova and Nevada to their non-conference schedule. My question to you is, are you not excited, sir, about that non-conference schedule?
Well, I am very excited about it. And, Jim, to be honest with you, I think Penn State has a chance to win all three of those games. Now, obviously, a lot can change between now and then, but I think they're going to be very competitive, at the very least, in those three games. I did have a couple people reach out and ask, what is FIU? What does FIU stand for? Because a lot of the stories don't have – it is just, so if you don't know, it's Florida International University. And, yeah, there's not a lot of real strong – powerful tradition behind FIU, but you know, it's in the state of Florida, pretty good state for football.
Okay, FIU, what's their team nickname?
The soon to be beaten by Penn State Nittany Lions. Is it Eagles? No, that's I don't know. What is it?
I don't know. That's why I was asking you.
My gosh, Jeff. I should know that one actually, and I don't.
That's your homework assignment for next
week. There it is.
Come back next week with the team name for F. Hey, you at least had Florida International. You had that part of it, Jeff. All right, that's going to be the last word for our show. Thank you all for listening. Make sure you join us next time on the Keystone Kickoff Show.
Are you ready to elevate your game day experience? Then it's time for turnkey tailgating with Revel XP. You get to tailgate close to Beaver Stadium with our exclusive area next to the soccer field. Revel XP will provide the tent, the chairs, table, even the cooler and ice. We even partner with local food and beverage providers to cater your tailgate event. As someone has enjoyed tailgating with Revel XP, I know you're going to love it. Go to RevelXP.com for more info.